Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Bob Jordan. He's a musician, and at various times in his life, he's been a DJ, booking agent, guitar seller, and now also an author. We're talking about his book, Sentenced to Death, A Near-Random Shuffle of Musical and Literary Observations. Bob, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
For me too. Hi, Mark.
I am so glad you got in touch with me about this book. There are books you read, and then there are books you have an experience with. This is one of the latter. You got to talk to me about getting this. How did you get this book down? Like, what was the process of writing it?
During the year 2006 in September, I was without a car. And I sat in my house wishing I could get out. It was at the same exact time that Hurricane Katrina was threatening New Orleans. And I looked around at my books and my record collection, and I sat in a chair. Now, at that time, I didn't have the internet. I'm kind of a Luddite, and it took slow to accept the world as it seems to be. And so, I pride myself in having a lot of trivia and memory in my head. So I played one record after another and sat down and wrote, thoughts that were triggered by the music and other thoughts about the world I had created in my living room, which was kind of a fortress of sanity against the larger insanity of our society. Wow. And as I wrote these thoughts, I didn't write them sequentially. I wrote them in one of those composition books, and I'd write a thought, and then I'd turn a page and write another thought somewhere on the blank page. And if it was four sequential thoughts that made sense together, I skipped a page for each one, and then I went back and I filled in. So I wrote it in sort of a random order, which is why the experience of reading it is can be a little bit random. I'll say something on one page, and then two pages later, without too much explanation, I will continue that thought.
This is what I love about this book. And also, it's in two sections, and you basically say that you can read the second section first, because that's really the first section, and then read the second section.
Yeah, and I, except for the fact that toward the end of the book, I feel that it really starts to cascade, and you just can't, I mean, even I can't stop reading it once I get like 10 pages from the end. In that sense, that's why I put the first section second, because the ending was so, I couldn't follow that. So, then I put part two, which was written later. So I wrote all of part one together and came up with the ending. But then when I finished it, I still had more thoughts and more records. And so I just kept going.
What's amazing about it, Bob, is that all the while that I was reading it, I kept thinking, or feeling rather, let me put it that way, that I was reading poetry. Now, granted, this is about music and it's about you. I mean, this is virtually a personal, very idiosyncratic history of music. But it reads like Don Marquis crossed with William Burroughs and gonzo journalism. But it has a poetic feel to it.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, that wasn't my intention, but at the same time, I think because, you know, of the structure, which is all these fairly short sentences, I think it is very much like an epic poem written by that room full of monkeys, you know.
Yeah, but they're monkeys with really good musical tastes.
Well, That's the other thing. I mean, I've been a student of music and also a musician my whole life, and there's so much music that I actively hate that I wanted to make sure to not mention any of those things. And what was left over was the music that I, you know, that I base my sanity on. And there's so many people that I identify with that make interesting music that you can't put in a genre or a category. And by the same token, they're not particularly well known, but a lot of them have, you know, an excellent catalog of music really are worth investigating. So again, I say this was before the internet, because my intention was to create something that somebody else could read and then take any one sentence that intrigued them and start exploring that, mentioning, say, Carla Bley or Lenny Rowe or Moondog, and say, well, there's an entire universe. I'm giving you one sentence, and there's an entire universe. I mean, you can spend a year on any one of these people.
You really can. And I found myself going to the internet, looking up some of the people I didn't know and some of the music. And I got, and like at the end of reading the book, I had this like huge shopping list of things I needed to get.
Well, that was my intention, is to turn people on to things that and again, in 2006, it was different. It was a little different. I was reluctant to publish the book when I had the chance, because I thought, well, now it's not such a big deal, you know, to be turning on to people, because people can, you can find everything on the internet. You just put in a name and it's there. And even though it was, you know, only 12 years ago, it was a bit different then. And especially for me, because I didn't really know, I didn't have access, and I didn't know what was online, you know, the incredible resources that we have.
But one of the things that's lacking today is first of all, a guide, a person to recommend different things. See, that happened when we were young. I think we're about the same age. Maybe I might be older than you.
Well, I just had my 69th birthday.
You're just a few years older than me by 2 years. That's it. Yeah. But, you know, there were people, when we grew up, there were people who guided and recommended stuff, or you had friends who had records, and you'd be sitting in their house, and you'd look through their records, and you go, what the hell is this?
Oh, yeah, well, we had DJs. I mean, no.
Well, that was the thing.
There were us that do radio, but, you know, we aren't even allowed to be what those people were able to be.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When we were teenagers, there were people who were DJs who would play music you hadn't heard before. Now, with satellite radio, it's like you go to the Elvis channel, you go to the Doobie Brothers channel, and you hear the music you already know thrown back at you. So I don't get that surprise ever, of like, what was that? You know, and that's the surprise. That's what I got from you. Now that I'm talking about this, that's what I got from your book. I get that, man, I've never heard of this before. Who is this? Now, all of that aside, and we'll talk more about it, this book is also really funny.
Yeah, I would hope so.
It is. You've never met a pun you never liked. You didn't like.
I do like my puns.
Man, this is like filled with puns, but it's also screamingly sort of wry funny too. And it's the kind of thing, like, I'm going to have you read a page or two later in the show, because people have to hear you read this. I just imagine you up playing your guitar on stage and then, like, in the middle of a piece, just sort of stopping and then, like, reciting two of the lines from the book and then keep playing and then just keep writing, reciting the line of the book. That would be, like, an awesome stage show. It would be fantastic.
Yeah, well, I do that sometimes, you know. There'll be a song that just has a line in it that just, you know, I know that the line is powerful. I mean, maybe when I play music, I don't do songs that I write. Even though I've written a lot of songs, those are more for my recordings than my performances. When I perform, it's mostly covers. And occasionally, I'll hear a line that's just like, wow, that's a really good line.
Yeah,
even though I'm supposed to know, and I'll stop and I'll I'll digress, you know.
See, that's cool. I like that.
Well, you can get away with it when you're playing solo. You can't when you do that with a band, you know, they start throwing drumsticks at you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is musician Bob Jordan. At different points in his life, he was always a musician. He's been a DJ, booking agent, guitar seller, and he's also an author. We're talking about his book, Sentenced to Death, A Near Random Shuffle of Musical and Literary Observations. I want to talk about some of the things in the book that just you credit inspiration to David Markson. Can you elaborate on that?
David Markson was a denizen of Greenwich Village, very intellectual and astute student of the classics, meaning the Greeks and the Romans and all that, and a student of opera, popular culture. He wrote a few pulp-type entertainments in the 50s, some satires on Private Eye stuff. He wrote a satire on westerns called Dirty Dingus McGee that was made into a sort of comedy western movie.
I remember that. That had Frank Sinatra in it, didn't it?
Yeah. And then toward the latter part of his life, he started putting out these books, which were full of elusive references, very much like what I'm doing, but elusive to a different type of interests like opera and the classics. And he loved to tell you how certain famous people met their death.
Wow.
But anyway, the syntax that he used, it turns out that he composed these his last four books. He had index cards with random facts on them, and he went through each index card that he hadn't used in any of his previous writing and put them down sort of one after another into these four books.
Wow.
This Is Not a Novel, Vanishing Point. And in each one, he tried to get further and further away from a novel that would have characters or a plot or anything like that. And he essentially developed a style which I thought, well, anybody that reads this is going to want to write this way. And I thought there would be a huge amount of books coming out in that format, you know, not plagiarism at all, but just to have the freedom to just write what's your knowledge or your memories without having to wrestle with the artifice of characters and plot. And I thought, well, what a relief, you know. I mean, you don't have to sit and make up these intricate lies called literature, you know, to be a writer. And I thought, well, I'm going to try to do that too, that same type of thing, but fantastic. I'm going to talk about my universe, you know.
Yeah.
And that's how, I mean, so in a way it's plagiarism, but in a way, I mean, it's not at all. But some of the syntax that Markson used, I tried to capture that. You know, starting a sentence with an adjective or something, you know.
Early on in the book, there's a line that I love this. The audacity of writing with nothing to say necessarily, but some things to mention. And, that's the other thing about this book. It's infinitely quotable.
Well, good. Yeah. I, again, some of the lines are me trying to explain what it is I'm doing in the book, you know, with the book. And that's one of those lines where I'm realizing that, you know, I really don't have a point here or a message, but I did want to mention in passing such and such, you know.
Well, what it seemed to me is, like, you've had a long, serious life in music, and it just came time to data dump. Like, you've got an awful lot of things that you've listened to, that you've played, that you've had experience with, bands you've seen, And at a certain point in your life, you want to get it all out there, and this seemed to be the format.
Well, you're right on it. And in fact, it goes a little, there's a little more to it than that. In addition to the music, I read, and I, from about 1974, after I was clear of the college baloney where they make you read stuff, you know, but in the mid-70s, right up until the late 90s, I read about a book a day.
Yeah.
And most of it was first it was science fiction, and only sort of the weird science fiction guys like Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, that's Philip K. Dick's work is throughout this book.
Yeah, and Alfred Bester,
yep,
and Frederick Brown, the real crazies, really, the psychological science fiction writers. The guys that wrote science fiction because that was where they could get paid to write, and they would have written whatever genre to say what they wanted to say. And then I started reading all the detective and pulp stuff I could get my hands on, and it kept bugging me, like, well, I'm not really interested in the subject matter, but I love the writing, and I just the process of reading was just how I entertained myself instead of, say, watching a DVD or a movie, which I don't do much of. So it was the music, but also all these books that I read, and I'm thinking, I think somewhere in the book I say it, you know, all this stuff comes in and nothing comes out. And then here I am stuck at home without a car, nice weather, and waiting for the hurricane to come north. And it just, stuff all started coming out. And I just let it, you know, I just devoted. I probably wrote the book in a space of about less than 3 weeks, if not less than 2 weeks.
There's so much stuff in here that when I read it, I either just identified with it or really made me laugh or really made me go, I thought about this. And I want to tell one section that when I read this, I went, shit, I've actually thought about this. 24 Hours from Tulsa, okay, the song, is where exactly? You'll need a compass, actually both kinds. I've thought about that song, drives me freaking crazy.
Yep.
Like, explain the song for people who've never heard. First of all, there's probably a ton of people who've never heard the song before. It's a weird song.
Yes. It's a Burt Bacharach and Hal David tune that Gene Pitney.
Gene Pitney, man, first of all.
True. And I used to sing the song too. I sang it at my brother's wedding in 1976. But the idea that I was only 24 hours from Tulsa. Well, are you walking? Are you driving? Are you in a plane?
I've thought the same thing. Like, first of all, you can't be in a plane.
Australia? I mean, is it, you know, Oklahoma City and you're going to hitchhike? I mean, you just don't know. And it's like you think he's telling you where he is, and you don't, you know, he could be in Seattle. He could be anywhere. And
if he's driving, he literally has to be in like Canada on some out. I mean, first of all, he can't be any by air. There's nowhere on earth by plane. He could be 24 hours from Tulsa. So he has to be like skateboarding or something. I don't know what he's doing.
Maybe he has a rental car and he's driving, you know, 10 hours to get to an airport. I mean, you just don't know. And yet they pull it off like, oh, we know exactly where, you know. I mean, you think, well, he's not far, but I mean, but then again, he's 24 hours from Tulsa, but he's going to sleep for 10 hours. So does that count? Is that part of the 24 hours? I mean, he's in a motel.
The funny thing is, I've actually gotten a compass and tried to figure out, like, where is he? It's like, okay, we got to move on here. I can't believe you saw the Bonzo Dog Band.
That's right, twice.
Oh, yeah. Man, I'm jealous.
In fact, I saw them on their second gig in the USA.
Oh, man. They're like historical gigs or historic bands. I always wish I saw. That's one of my top 10.
Oh, and I was totally, when I first heard their record, I was totally killed by it. And I thought, well, this is more the type of music I'd like to be doing than the music that I am doing, you know. And then to see them, they brought theater
right
to rock and roll, which nobody else was even attempting. Now, imagine, these guys have flown from England. They played Detroit, Michigan the night before, and they're driving to Boston. Now, how much gear can they bring? And they brought exploding robots. they brought bubble
machines. Oh, wow.
I mean, it was ridiculous.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, yeah. I want you, could you just pick up the book and open it up to whatever page you want and read?
All right. Funny, it starts with a line from Neil Innes from the
cool.
Bonzo Dog Band. Face mail in the meat zone. If I can hold to David Markson's approach, I won't go on and on about any one thing. Some hi-fi enthusiasts, later to be known as audiophiles, confine their enthusiasm to train records, eschewing music altogether. I'm smoking a blend of clove cigarettes, leaf marijuana, and papers saturated with the oil of crushed cubeb. The author massages his lungs. Thank you, music lovers, Spike Jones, LP. For example, Elvis Presley was trying to be Dean Martin. Kipple. Apologies to better authors, while I might wax on about certain less than minor figures. Kids today don't know their majors from their minors. Tangentially, Paul Burleson getting a new guitar sound with a broken amplifier.
Wow.
Stereotypic thinking, being sociological, is that profiling? Timelessness being another criteria, obviously. Hi, Dad, in the morning. Hi, Jazz, in the evening.
Wow.
He jazz in the evening. I pity the poor TV watcher. Coffee as a constant. That food is too beautiful to eat. Pops from where? To land in my head? Eschewing music? Rhythmically masticating in time to a march or a tango? One more. Oliver Messiaen. Charles Ives,
wow.
The Three Sons, the Hoosier Hotshots.
Wow. Bob, this is why I wanted to hear it. I wanted to hear you read it. That really is poetry. It really is poetry. And it's a different kind of poetry, but it's amazing. It's out there, but man, that's poetic. I love it. There's so there are lines that just haunt me from this book. We see deer. Can you talk about the line, we see deer?
Yep. That's actually on a page, I think, where I'm talking about Michael Hurley and Peter Stampfl.
Oh, yeah.
And Peter says that Michael Hurley and Taj Mahal were in Greenwich Village, and they both decided they didn't like the city, and they went out camping in the late spring in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, in 1961 or two. And Peter credits Michael with starting the Back to the Land movement among the hippies by doing that. And Peter decides to go out and visit them. And then he comes back, and they say, well, what do you do out there? And he says, we see deer.
I want a T-shirt that says that, we see deer. We only have a few minutes left, and I could just talk to you forever. Do you still remember the first music you heard as a child?
I do and I don't. I do remember the first music that killed me, basically.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm looking for.
It was, I had no musicians in the family, but I was always attracted to the radio. I played ukulele and organ and stuff when I was in grammar school, just self-taught. I've never taken a lesson, but so I heard a lot of music and I heard a lot of pop stuff throughout the 50s, but nothing that, you know, completely grabbed me. But one day I think it might have been 1961, it could have been 1962, so I would have been 12 or 13, and I was a Yankee fan. I was trying to get the Yankee game on my AM radio, and in order to do that, I had to tune in WACE in Chicopee. I think it's 880 on your dial. And it was really tenuous out on my porch to try to pull in, you know, a 20,000-watt station from Chicopee to hear the Yankees. And I'm fiddling with the dial, and I'm fiddling with the dial, and I can't quite get it in. And I move the dial slightly to the left, and this voice comes in singing, pa 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 oo ma o ma o ma o ma o ma o, the Rivingtons. And I just...
Mow, wow. Wow.
I just froze. I mean, I'm hearing this pa 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 pa.
Oh, man.
Which was a precursor to Surfing Bird.
Oh, yeah.
The more popular thing. And I actually thought that Papa Umau Mau song was a huge hit, which it turns out it really wasn't. But for me, it was like, wow, that something visceral happened. Listening to that low bass voice and the rhythm, and then the band coming back in. I think I must have tuned it in right at that point where the music stops and the guy just goes,
right, yeah.
And I'm thinking, is this something wrong with my set? And then the music came in, and I'm like, wow. And from then I just started listening to music on the radio instead of baseball.
We're completely out of time, Bob. I'm going to have you come back. Because I have a lot of stuff I want to talk to you about, selling guitars and all the rest of it, too. And we'll read more from your book, too. So we'll have you come back. Do you mind?
Yeah, let's do that, because there's other things I would have mentioned about my publisher.
Yeah. And so we'll have you come back. My guest tonight has been Bob Jordan. He's obviously a musician, but he's also been a DJ, booking agent, guitar seller, and now he's an author. Sentenced to Death, A Near Random Shuffle of Musical and Literary Observations. Bob, it's been a real pleasure.
Can you just mention it's published by Arts End Books?
Yeah, do that.
And it's
got color pictures.
Yep.
It's beautiful. It's worth the price of admission just to read this. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.
Thank you.